with debts, the way debts are captured, there's typically a 1 to 2 week delay from documentation to when the data is reported. Typically, you know, debts are counted earlier and continuously revised over time, you know, for a couple of weeks. And so there's, you know, quite a bit of variability in some of the way the data is captured.
So it's just a statistical anomaly that the numbers aren't catching up, let's say on Saturday and Sunday from the weekend, and that would explain much of the difference?
Yes, and I think, you know, I've been following pretty closely the debt reporting in Mexico, because I'm originally from there, and you know, that has been the topic, you know, the president and different, you know, individuals in public health have been dealing with, because they have even a longer lag than we have in the U.S., which is, you know, at most usually 2 weeks. In Mexico, it's about a month. And so people are really hesitant of, you know, what is the truth? I think we're doing a little bit better here in the U.S., but nevertheless, you know, it is a revolving, you know, problem.
So, I mean, just the difference between...
Just the difference between the number of new cases ranging from 2,000 to 3,000, that's about a 50% increase, whereas in terms of deaths, where they're fluctuating from 20 to over 100.
Yeah, and there's also, you know, something that the CDC is doing where they're capturing multiple things, or they're capturing pneumonia-like illness deaths, influenza-like illness deaths, and then COVID-like illness deaths. And so it's sort of a system that is capturing deaths all related to COVID. And, you know, there's a lot of investigation that goes on with looking at these cases. Was it really COVID? Was it pneumonia? Was it influenza? And so, you know, it does take a while to, you know, quality check some of these data.
There remains much that we don't know about this disease, but we've been hearing anecdotally that many people who are considered recovered in the statistics are actually far from well. Are there any patterns developing in terms of what people are experiencing generally as their bodies fight off the illness?
Most of the data that we have about the long-term impact from COVID-19 is coming from China, because they've seen this before. So in general, most people recover completely with, you know, some residual coughs or shortness of breath. But there is, you know, a certain group of the population that has been reported to experience quite poor long-term outcomes, specifically, you know, individuals that experience and develop this acute respiratory distress syndrome, the ARDS, where, you know, it's a condition that, you know, describes an excessive lung damage. A couple of studies that come out of, you know, Wuhan, China, have shown that individuals that develop RDS tend to also experience what they call pulmonary fibrosis. Pretty much is holes in their, you know, lungs. And these complication from, you know, COVID-19 tends to, you know, have long-term effects. The severity of the symptoms vary across individuals, but some of the symptoms, you know, involve shortness of breath, a cough, fatigue, you know, aching muscles. And, you know, in the older population, the symptoms are even more dramatic. Some other long-term consequences, a lot of the individuals that undergo, you know, extensive ICU care, there seems to be, you know, high level of reporting for mental health issues like PTSD, anxiety, depression, and, you know, clearly diminished physical abilities and cognitive impairment. There was one study, you know, that also looked at brain function as a result of prolonged ICU stay, and 30% of patients had neurological complications. For the U.S., you know, individuals that, you know, we're seeing, we're just at the point of starting to look at that. But, you know, how do we know how that the impact that this will have in the U.S. population is still out in the air, but we would expect that we're going to see high levels of impact. I do a lot of work on COVID-19 specifically for elderly individuals that live in long-term care facilities. And the long-term impact is going to be particularly very impactful in individuals that live in these nursing homes. A lot of the individuals that live in these nursing homes tend to have higher rates of chronic lung disease, heart disease, kidney, and so many comorbidities that, you know, even though they survive their experience, they have a path ahead of themselves. Being in these nursing homes just really puts them at a higher risk for long-term complications. So I think 65 plus individuals in nursing long-term care facilities are particularly vulnerable for the long-term impact of COVID-19. And I hope that, you know, ourselves and some of our colleagues will be looking at that.
What role, if any, is the weather playing? New cases are rising pretty rapidly in Florida and Arizona in hot and humid and also hot and dry climates. Meanwhile, New Zealand seems to have defeated that. They're in the middle of their winter. I don't know what's going on in Africa or, you know, Chile and Argentina. At the same time, here in the U.S., we generally associate cool weather with flu season and these types of respiratory illnesses. Is there any indication that this will get much worse in our winter?
You know, so I think there are some studies that have been pretty solid about the viability of the virus in cold conditions. But I think everyone that we've been chatting with, you know, I think the winter is going to be probably the harder time to deal with this, because primarily we know we'll definitely will have, you know, a lot of activity of flu-like illness, and there's a lot of, you know, seasonal variability that we see. But, you know, one of the things that we typically think of the winter is there's a lot of indoors contact, right? So one of the things of the summer is that, you know, although people are, you know, connecting more, that at least we're in the open spaces. But, you know, when it gets cold, you know, people tend to be more indoors. And so I would say, you know, what I have been doing myself is, you know, trying to do as much as I can in getting my outdoor activity out, because I do feel that we have to sort of prepare for probably that winter where most of us by that time will be tired of being isolated. We will be tired of, you know, doing all these control measures. So you put all the pieces together, you know, people just, you know, giving out on, you know, distancing, face mask, and then being indoors, and then the flu season. And so I think there will be not weather alone, but multiple factors that are just going to probably make things a bit worse. I do think temperature is one of them, but it is a combination of factors that just all will, you know, convene to make this a worse situation, I believe.
But is there any pattern developing in terms of the Southern Hemisphere, which just went through its first day of winter?
So in terms of seasonality in the South, I actually don't think that we have seen anything specific. I know that people are closely monitoring that, but, you know, it has been sort of a crapshoot. You know, some places have lower than you expect, some are higher. So there's really no consistent picture yet.
I mean, people say, you know, New York City got hit very, very hard, and yet Singapore or Hong Kong, which is much more dense, seems to have been able to weather it quite well.
When I think about the future and I look around myself, I was actually this past week, I visited my family in Riverside under a very contained environment. And I was shocked to see that in grocery stores, you have people walking around with no mask. I was shocked to see that there was a set of four firemen that came in the grocery store with no, you know, with no face masks. I was shocked. You know, I live in Davis, and I know in Davis, we have a very different picture. But when we think about the future, I think this is where people are, that I do a lot of modeling, and a lot of the modeling is based on people's behaviors, which is really, you know, impossible to predict. And so I was watching my phone over the week, you know, weekend when I was up there, and, you know, there's these continuous reports, cases in Riverside increased by 20-30% within a couple of days. And then you go to the store and everyone is walking around with no masks. So I do think that there's just so many pieces to it that in the U.S. we're just kind of failing to keep up with high standards. One example that I can think of, Taiwan, is the one country that I believe has done things amazingly well from the very beginning. Fortunately or unfortunately, they had a very bad SARS pandemic in 2003. So they had the opportunity to learn how to do things better. But, you know, this time around with, you know, COVID-19, a population of, you know, 23 million individuals, they had 446 cases, 7 deaths. And from day one, they say, we're going to do masks. They had a lot of plastic barriers. They had sentences and, you know, fines for individuals that were wearing, you know, PPEs and masks. And they really have done super well in controlling them. It's been for a couple months where they have restaurants open. They're having a normal life. But, you know, they have continued to really follow each of the measures for prevention. And I feel like we could do half of what they're doing. It's kind of amazing how they are just having a normal life with very, very small impact. But I think everyone's in a sort of very high levels of solidarity and just doing everything that they need to be doing to prevent the infections. And then you have the case of, Canada, which is very similar to Taiwan in terms of population size. And Canada is like the US, everything has gone wrong. And, it's like similar population, completely sort of devastated, socially ready to give up and, anxious and the way the US is. And so it's very interesting. And I think, I was telling my husband that we went to visit the family and then I find out, people are having all these parties and they're coming to us and I'm like, what is going on? And so I was like, we have to protect ourselves. We can't assume that no one's going to protect us. And so I think everyone needs to assume that, people have infection and you just need to do what you have to do to protect yourself and your family. And it is shocking to me how a lot of different cultures, like my Latin culture, people are having parties and baptisms and weddings, and I just cannot understand that. There's a lot of information that people think is just a hoax and they still don't believe it. They're like, I don't know anybody that has it. I don't know anybody that has died from it. And so it's hard to, how do you manage that? I was shocked. It's been interesting.
People seem to already have virus fatigue. They're tired of the precautions, and with more and more things getting back to normal, it seems as though more people are greeting masks and distancing with a shrug. And if you hear that they're talking about reopening movie theaters, you'd say, well, yeah, I guess it's okay if I go to the pub, when 2 weeks ago the pubs weren't open and people were saying they were going to avoid them. Do you have any words for those whose resolve might be faltering?
I think it's lack of belief, which is hard to, I'm struggling myself to be able to, answer this, because like I mentioned, I went to Riverside this past weekend and I hear yesterday from my sister that my mom was in a casino. And I'm like, so enclosed places are just very difficult. Movie theaters, bars, casinos, those are the places where you don't want to be. If we can move some of the restaurants to, have food outdoors, I think that that's fine. There's just so much variability in how people behave. And unfortunately, I think, as you mentioned, people are fatigued and they're just, it's impossible to understand. And I think part of this is that there's such mixed messaging from the very top, starting with our president, that there is just no consistent message and people are just fed up. And I think all of that has an impact on how effective, we could be. Yeah, I have no idea how to, other than putting evidence out there. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.